Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are on we're going to be covering season 4, episode 5, Fagin, and season 4, episode 6, Terra Nullius.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, sure. More Latin.
More Latin. We're getting back to some Latin. Yay. And for those of you who have not been listening, I'm just going to say it. Yes, we have disclaimers, and those include that there will be cursing. Yeah, definitely, for sure. Yeah. That there will be spoilers for other seasons, most likely, and that we are also drinking. And so what would you say that you are drinking?
I would say that I'm drinking Dr. Pepper. Why'd you phrase it like that?
I don't know. I made weird.
Why'd you make it sound like a riddle? Like, okay, so what is it do you think that you are drinking?
I know what I'm drinking. I am drinking a sparkling Duchess. Why? Because there are sparkling things involving, well, princesses, but whatever.
Yeah, it's not a Duchess.
It's not a Duchess, but this is what I have. This
her nickname's Dutch, though.
No, it still sucks. It's
not really good.
Whatever. But for those of you who have not heard, this is one of my favorite go-to cocktails. It is elderflower liqueur, ginger ale, and Prosecco, and it tastes lovely. And I have it in a nice, pretty glass. It's got a little heart on it. Because hearts. Oh, isn't that sweet? That has nothing to do with the first of these two episodes, though. So the first one
it has nothing to do with love. But maybe love for one's country, but not really. The first note I have for it, which is for season 4, episode 5, Fagin, the first note I have is it's the obligatory check your privilege episode.
Yeah. Because, you know, we get
every single season has an obligatory check your fucking privilege episode, except for season 1. Now that I think of it, I don't think season 1 has one.
I can go back and think about that, but not right this second.
I know for a fact season 2 and season 3 had one.
Mm-hmm. And this is the one for this season. And this one opens with a news report about a guy has broken into Buckingham Palace. No!
What the fuck was that? Anyway, his name is Michael Fagin, and he broke into the palace and he talked to the queen. The actor playing Fagin is the druggie from Sherlock.
Yay, we've got Sherlock. He's actually quite good. So
he's great. He's fine. We see Fagin waking up. This is like a couple days earlier, but or weeks earlier, I'm not sure. We see Fagin waking up in his empty apartment where his family used to live with him and going to the unemployment office. He is a painter for hire and to make ends meet and ends the day in a pub.
Oh, but I love it. This is right up in my wheelhouse because you have all of these 80s songs. And so he has his sad pathetic montage, but it is with The Cure, Boys Don't Cry in the background.
Yeah, like, there is Boys Don't Cry.
I'm a tough guy kind of thing. So he ends up in the pub, but at the pub is his estranged wife and her new boyfriend.
Mm-hmm. He starts a fight with the guy, mm-hmm. and that's whatever. Then you see the prime minister telling Elizabeth that South Georgia has been recaptured and the attacks on Argentina are going well.
Yay! Whatever. So Fagin, is there anything else?
Philip praises her action, like the prime minister's action.
Well, I think it's a nationalism thing for Philip. I mean, he feels like the country feels more unified and that we're actually having success with it, unlike that fucked up shit with the Suez Canal. So
she also, Elizabeth complains about the prime minister insisting on more security precautions, because Elizabeth wants to maintain transparency and openness, which is a callback to the second season's
yes.
Pick Your Privilege episode, where they were talking about, here are some ideas, like televise the Christmas message, meet people and be more transparent.
Yeah, that actually comes up later in this episode. So yeah, I think that come back around to it, but yes. So she's like, no, we I need to, you know, not have as much security. It's like living in a prison anyway.
She talks about maybe it is.
Gosh, well, they meet the general public.
Yes. So now they're having their general public meeting that they do once a year. But everyone in her receiving line has dressed themselves up. They all have their beautiful hats.
Well, if you're going to see the queen, it's not like you're just going to be wearing slacks. Like, I mean, it's not.
Oh, yeah. But again, it's a very cultivated grouping. And they have a set of people that they are going to be talking to in the group. And you know,
well, it's not like she can meet everyone.
Well, right. But she thinks she is. And I think that that's part of the checking your privilege business. The line that Fagin is in is not all that, though. Mm-hmm. And when he gets to the front of the line, the clerk behind the desk asks him his name. Is like, Bond, James Bond. And the clerk is not amused.
I think in the scene before that, when he was in the employment line, he was like, I was an Olympian in the past 2 weeks. I've been traveling the world. And it's just like, no. Yeah. But he also doesn't like how he's being treated by the unemployment office. But it's like, okay.
Right. And they're like, go see your MP. Go see your member of parliament if you want a bitch. They do it in a very bureaucratic kind of way, but whatever. So he does. He tries to meet with his MP. And he goes in and he's really upset that Margaret Thatcher's picture's on the wall, which like, duh.
Well, he also like the night before he goes to the MP he's listening to the prime minister on TV talking about not coddling the unemployed, but telling them to work harder. So.
Yeah. And I know that much like the showrunners, you do not approve of Thatcher. I think that what she's saying is...
I understand what she's saying. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. It's just, it's not realistic for every person.
Correct. And you know, the problem is that how do you distinguish the people who actually need help from the people who are faking it?
Yeah. I mean, that's always been a problem. And... Mm-hmm. It's not something we need to touch on right now. He goes to his local member of parliament to talk about the system and how much the war is costing. And the member basically tells him to talk. I don't know why every time I've written talk, and this happened in the last episode's notes, like it changes to yak in my phone.
Deputy yak.
Like, I guess. I don't know why. To talk to the leader of the opposition about the prime minister, and if that fails, go to the queen, like just facetiously, just like, or if you're not satisfied with what I have to say, go to the leader of the opposition and talk to him. If not, go straight to the boss. Like, I'm not going to be able to really help you.
Well, right, but Fagin really is kind of a dick to me. Yeah, but the Fagin's kind of a dick to him. Now, I agree that the bureaucratic runaround is unacceptable, but again, you know, there are a whole lot of things in this world that a single person, even the queen, cannot control. So you get to see the tripping of the color with the recycled footage of Olivia Colman.
It's her birthday parade stuff.
That's what the tripping of the color is.
Fagin
is getting the runaround because he wants to fix his flat. There's problems with the water and those kinds of things. But he's also
it's one of the main reasons why he's not gotten custody over his children.
Or even visitation, because the flat's fucked up, but he is not the person who's on the lease. He's not the primary. Well, and they're living on welfare. So because his name is not down as the primary tenant, he can't apply to get things fixed. He gets the bureaucratic runaround. He's really pissed off and he's just walking it off, which again, I think is a healthy thing to do. And he walks
this, this next part's not really healthy.
No, it's not, because he's walking by the panel. She's like, Mr. Impulse, hey, jumps
the fence. I've never climbed a fence before. It's just like, okay.
Wall, opens a window, sits on the throne, sneaks into the storage room where the gifts are, and drinks a bottle of wine.
Yeah. And then he knocks over a vase.
And he goes poking to bedrooms. He's heading to the queen's bedroom and he is seen by a maid. And maid's like, eek, like a mouse. And she tells security there's a guy, but he escapes because security at the palace really is kind of lax.
Well, to be fair, the queen's not even there. True. So I think it's more of a skeleton crew anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's the skeleton crew, but I think as we see later, security's kind of lax. So,
yeah. But apparently the queen likes it that way.
Yeah, well, she was at Windsor. Martin gives the rundown to Elizabeth and Philip, says that they bicker over the Guyanese vase that was broken. Phil's like, oh, it's fucking ugly, kind of thing. Describing it. She's like, no, it's historic.
Elizabeth doesn't want the prime minister to know, because then she'll just insist on the extra security, which at this point, yeah, you probably should get the extra security, because you got lucky this time. You might not get it again. But
we're going to juxtapose that with Fagin, who is basically stalking his children.
And then starts a fight with the guy in front of his kids.
Which, on the stage,
Fagin. That's the way to get visitation.
Yeah, exactly. But the stage
fight, playground,
like really not the best. I'm rather disappointed. But the new guy gets Fagin in a headlock, and he leaves humiliated. And he's told,
I don't know what he expected to happen.
But he's told you can't have contact with the kids anymore.
Yeah, that's a good idea, considering how he's reacting.
The way they make it sound is forever. Not like, hey, we're going to send you to anger management, or hey, do you have a mental health problem? We're going to send you mental health treatment. Is you don't get to see your kids anymore. And again, a lot of what you've talked about is, there are infrastructure issues for people with mental health issues.
I'm not saying that there isn't, but if he's going to be acting like this with the kids, in front of the kids on a playground, he does not deserve contact with his kids.
No, I agree.
I'm not saying that his mental health issues shouldn't be acknowledged and addressed, but I am saying that it's smart to keep the kids away from him for now until he deals with his issues.
Right. And quite honestly, and I'm drawing on my own past experience, because I did do work for the Department of Family and Children's Services. You can send people to treatment until you are blue, and until people actually really want to change, they don't change. So
I'm not, it's just whatever. Moving on. The Argentinians have surrendered and the Falkland Islands are in British hands. Prime Minister
is a celebration.
Is now more popular. We see Rule Britannia, everybody's cheering in the streets. Great. I also love how they mentioned we will never ever ever be slaves, and I'm just like, interesting. But you will have them. But it's just,
oh, hang on.
But no, I'm just saying, it's, I just didn't realize that was the words.
What exactly are you saying?
I'm just saying slaves existed.
Existed in the 80s. No.
Not in the 80s, but it's just an old-fashioned song. I didn't know those were the words, and so I found the choice of words interesting.
Okay.
They won't be slaves, but it's, anyway, moving on. I don't know why.
The UK actually abolished slavery before the US did, so.
Well, they were ahead of the curve. Then we see Elizabeth's nightly routine. It's very boring. And then Fagin breaks into the palace early that morning whilst the security guards aren't looking.
Right, right. Good job. The thing is, it's shift change. So you've got shift change. People are not really looking at the surveillance cameras, and it's very easy to do. It's very easy.
I'm not saying that it's not realistic during a
shift. Like they go and get creamer for the coffee and they miss him. And
I'm not saying it's not realistic. I'm just saying after a security breach like several nights ago, you should probably make sure you're more vigilant.
I would agree with that. But again, you get the sense that they don't have a ton of people. So they don't, normally you'd have two people looking, right? But there's only one. So
it's the graveyard.
And that guy had to go to the restroom or whatever, and shit happens.
But anyway, then he gets into Elizabeth's room and she wakes up thinking it's a servant. Then once she sees it's a random guy, she starts to scream. But then she just asks what he wants, and he says he just wants to talk. And then she's like, all right, well, then I will stop trying to screaming. And I'm just like, okay. Random guy in the bedroom, and you'd think that you'd want to scream a little bit more. You don't know what this guy's gonna do. And even though he says, let's just talk, I don't think that's a, okay.
No, I'm on this. I'm not thinking it turns up. It turns out well.
It does, but you didn't know that. This could be a creepy rapist. You never know. It doesn't make any sense to me that she's just kind of like, she chills after a little bit. Like, she does try to call for help a little bit later, but I'm just like, you're not really trying all that hard, are you?
No, it really is not. And of course, you also see how sparsely staffed at that time of day the palace is. I mean, he ends up like going into her bathroom because he like cut himself or something.
On the glass when he was breaking in.
And so she sends him in the bathroom to wash his hands so she can basically get on the phone. And she calls and no one hears it because they're running the vacuum.
Well, but she's also like, she rings for them using the electronic bell. She also calls and they don't hear them because of the vacuum, but still. And then she, he's just like, you have a manual toothbrush. I think you got, you'd think you'd get electric. And I'm just like, I mean, yeah, fair.
He's like, it's indicative of everything here. It is super posh, but it is all run down. So you've got chipped paint, stained wallpaper, all things are broken. And so that he talks about the mirage of democracy and asks to be saved from the prime minister and all these unemployed people. And her response is basically, look, all these crises that you're talking about, they correct themselves. We'll bounce back.
They bounce back. But then I actually kind of find this next line of his very funny, but they say I have mental health problems now. I don't. I'm just poor. I shouldn't laugh, but it is pretty funny to me.
It is pretty funny. And I think that there is probably some truth in both.
Desperation, right? Because of poverty is definitely something that you should be able to distinguish that from being poor, or not from mental health issues.
Right.
Because different.
There are justifiable circumstantial things that are not mental health issues, right?
Jean Valjean stealing that loaf of bread.
Yeah, exactly. That is not a mental health issue. That is a desperation issue. That is a circumstance issue. And I think sometimes people kind of, especially now, kind of conflate those things. And I'm not really sure how we tease that out, separate those things again.
It's kind of hard though.
Well, sometimes yes and sometimes no. And I think, again, that's, well, whatever. We have a less than robust mental health system to do that, unfortunately. And obviously they did in the 80s too, and that has not changed. That's a whole discussion and we don't have time for that. So the maid finally comes in and is bringing tea, and she's like, and she kind of like, backs out, freaks out, gets security. Fagin tells Elizabeth, thank you. And she's like, I don't want them to be too awful to you, shakes his hand. And
once everyone leaves, she starts like crying.
Yeah, exactly. She held it together just long enough. And
honestly,
then,
that is pretty crazy of a morning for you.
Way to wake up, damn. And so, but here's one of the things that I see as a continuity error. So the bedroom that he breaks into at Buckingham Palace is
not the connected bedroom to Phillips.
Right. So what the fuck happened there?
Well, and if it is, it's like her door was shut.
Whatever. It's not the same set we've seen before. So whatever. So the PM then goes to the palace and her hair, oh my God, is like bigger and more helmety than ever. It's terrifying.
Well, she has to celebrate, mother. Her hair gets bigger and bigger and her voice gets worse and worse.
Right. And so she talks about like, this unemployment stuff is just, the medicine she talks about like, we need, it's the medicine that we need. And the queen, her response is basically, we need to make sure it's not like horrible chemotherapy that kills the patient. And one of the things they attribute to Margaret Thatcher is that, we have these outdated notions of public duty And it, you know, creates this reliance on the state, and it risks the risks of ruin, and duty to family would have people, you know, work harder and get out and actually do some work rather than be like on the public dole, which is, again, it's, and she said that people have it within them to be great. And the queen's response is like, not everybody, not everybody's got that ability.
That's true.
And it is. And so, but she point, the prime minister points out, hey, you know, that guy who broke in here has a schizophrenia diagnosis. He's being put in a mental hospital. And oh, I gotta go. I got a victory parade.
Yeah, then you see Elizabeth watching the victory parade, and she's angry because she thinks the PM is getting ahead of herself and is really annoyed by the extra security. But well, at the same time,
Fagin said, it's one of those lines that he said when he was talking to the queen, and he's like, look, she's after everybody's job, including yours.
True.
And it's true, because again, the queen should be the head of the military, right? And she's had all these military things at the Tripping of the Colour, all of that. And it's like, where the fuck is she in this Falklands Islands thing?
Yeah, I don't remember them ever having a scene where, like, Margaret Thatcher talks to Elizabeth about it. And that's bizarre, because every other time before this, you've had Elizabeth being consulted on it. So it's weird. Then she talks to, well, Philip is just like, I'm sorry, I wasn't here to help you and protect you and all that stuff. I don't know where he was.
I don't either. It's very strange.
And, yeah. she defends Fagin again. It's just like, he wasn't crazy. He was just desperate and he wanted to be heard and all that stuff. And he said, Philip says, don't go all Shakespearean on me. And
oh, right. Because what she says is that, you know, he's a fool. And she's like, oh, it's like Lear's fool. And he's like, don't go all Shakespearean on me.
But he also says, she also says, I expect Mr. Fagin is relieved that he didn't climb through the window and land on your bed.
Damn straight.
Well, it turned out really differently.
Yep. Yep. And that's pretty much it.
Well, you see a little bit of a thing at the end where you see that the real Fagin was sent to a mental hospital. He was there for 3 years and then he got out and he's still alive today. Well, as of whenever that was filmed and released.
Yeah, but they don't say, hey, you know, like, we talked to him and we know exactly what happened, because they don't. They, I think, have made a lot of this up. So what was your best part of this?
I like that it raises issues of the time. I think that when you think of Margaret Thatcher being like, all right, we're going to go to Argentina and defend the Falkland Islands, we're going to go to war, you're just like, yeah, man, woman of action, we're going to do this. And you didn't really think about the consequences of doing that, like how much taxation is going to be put upon the people and how much that's going to cost.
Often war generates jobs because you have the whole military.
It doesn't, but it's just like, it seems to have been really short. So it's
I have no idea whether this one did or didn't. I have no, you know, obviously there is, hindsight's 2020. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, it's so, I like that it raises.
Or is it? But, you know.
Whatever. I like that it raises issues, especially with like the unemployment rate and how policies are affecting the people, like regular people. Yeah. And how Elizabeth thinks that she's meeting regular people, but they put up a front because she's the queen. But that's always going to be true. So I don't know what good's that's going to do. But, and then also I like that Elizabeth hears Fagin out, even though in that situation, I don't know if I would. And she defends him to a certain extent with like, well, he was just desperate. He wanted to be heard. He wanted to do all this stuff. Even if he has mental health issues, I think he has a point. I don't know if she should have defended him that much, but still. And I like the Philip scene fine. I will say this is not one of my favorite episodes. What are your best parts?
My best part is the performance by the guy playing Fagin. I think he does.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's also a good one.
I think it's really a well-portrayed thing. I have other thoughts about this episode, but that was it.
Yeah.
What was your worst part?
Margaret Thatcher's voice. It's boring. It focuses a lot on Fagin, which it makes sense because it's supposed to be more about him and why he felt driven to, well, at least with the extrapolation, felt driven to do this, but it's so boring. And it's about a person we do not know and are never going to see again. And that's true for a lot of these, like,
one-off
episodes. Like, especially for the Check Your Privilege episodes, it's like, all right, you're following this newspaper guy or whatever. But also, the fact that most of this is extrapolation, and it's like, okay, well, if he really did have schizophrenia, or does, that's a big part of it that we probably should have touched on.
And was not dealing shown
with his marital issues. I think there are more issues that he needs to work out, but they focus more on the marital issues and him not having custody of his kids, which, I mean, it makes sense. That's a big part, but I don't know. It was just boring.
Right. So my worst part I listed was the PM's hair, because her hair is fucking, I guess, from like bad to worse throughout this episode. And I noticed that kind of thing, but I agree with you, and I kind of want to talk about this Fagin extrapolation thing, because you don't end up in a mental hospital for that length of time just because you are poor and you have marital issues, right? I think they were focusing very much on the parts of it that people could identify with, but I suspect that there is a lot more to this. There's a lot that we're not going to see ever. Yeah. And again, one of my concerns is that he is the spokesperson for Margaret Thatcher's terrible. And it's kind of like, not necessarily, if any of this is accurate, it's not like he's a reliable source. So
no, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, whatever. So
we'll be the reliable sources. I'm kidding. At least with the character, we can be reliable sources.
Yeah.
So
what was your grade for this episode?
C. I do not like this episode all that much. It is very, very boring. It's more the extrapolation that kind of, I know how the news played it as like, oh, we'll never know what he said to her or whatever, but like, they're just being like, well, let's do our take on what it is. And that's fine, but it's boring. And I don't think that extrapolating with this part of it, it's another one of those things where it's like, this easily could have been like, this is a fine subplot. I don't know if I want it to be the main plot. It's kind of like with Anne and her a potential abduction. Like, it could have been a fine subplot where it's like, you may need extra security. Remember that thing that happened with Anne or whatever. Like, it just, I don't know why this was the main plot of this episode. Like, again, you could have done a lot of stuff. It's fine that you have the Check Your Privilege episode. It's pretty expected at this point, but I found it boring. It's saying the exact same things that we've heard before, but it's now coming from a schizophrenic. So it doesn't really do anything for me. I don't care. What about you?
Yeah. C-, D+. I hate episode. I mean, I honestly feel like it is a complete waste of my time.
I initially gave it a C-.
Not because the performances are necessarily bad. It's just like, it's a nothing.
Well, that's what kept me from making it a C-. It's the performances. Like, it's a C for me because of the performances.
It doesn't even get that for me, just because I really don't see a lot of redeeming value in this. So yeah, and it's just not great. I do not like this episode. So that's pretty much where we are.
On to season 4, episode 6, Terra Nullius. Here's another trigger warning about eating disorders. It does show up in this episode too. So be aware, if you're sensitive to that, skip this part. So
we're talking about Diana. And so yeah, this episode opens with the whole discussion of the fact that Charles and Diana are going to Australia. There's a new Aussie PM He wants
to get not like the royal family.
He wants to get rid of the monarchy, and this has been a theme in Australia for quite some time. Obviously, we saw that with when Philip went, blah blah blah.
Yes, the penal colony.
The penal colony. That's right. And he makes a joke about Elizabeth as being a pig at the head of a herd of cattle. Wow. I mean, it's like full on fucking like offensive shit from this guy. And so it's like, okay.
If he really believed that, then whatever. But
still. I mean, I think he does really believe it, but whatever. So there's a lot of pressure on Charles and Diana with this tour. You know, Philip, I think early on is questioning, like, why are they going?
But also they're bringing William along, little baby William, because
which Diana is insane. Insisted. But anyway, so Margaret tells Elizabeth, she's like Diane's really struggling. I heard gossip. There's a thing. Diane's bulimic. She's OCD. You see that her behavior. I mean, they show it while Margaret's narrating.
She's OCD.
Right. Yes. And Anne had heard also that Diana wants to take the baby as a stabilizing influence on this.
This is tour. Sad that you need a stabilizing influence in your marriage, being your child.
Right, which again, you and this may not be something that has crept into your world. It is a fact that in many relationships, when things are going to shit between a couple, the woman will get pregnant thinking that it will make the man commit. Like, oh, he'll change because we're having a baby kind of thing.
That's a nice thought, but no. Okay, so this is also what they say.
I can see the argument here, like, oh, well, I'll give him an heir and he'll treat me better, right?
Yeah, that'd be nice. Because,
Camilla, because that's what he does.
Anyway, then when they mention the stabilizing influence, I think the Queen Mother's like, when has a baby ever been a stabilizing influence on anything? And then Elizabeth's like, we never took the children anywhere. And Anne's like, yeah. You think that there might have been lasting consequences? And she's like, to what? The tour was a triumph.
Well, Anne,
that's so funny.
Anne's reactions to this are so great. Like, mom, you suck.
You left me and Charles alone for months.
Yeah, exactly. And hey, by the way, you were a great mom. So you cut to Charles and Camilla at some house party. Pardon me?
It's a hunting party and they're telling this story about a horny bear.
They both have the same sense of humor. There is so much chemistry between them. Mm-hmm. And the joke is, of course, that the bear is having sex with the hunter. You're not really in this for the hunting, are you?
Ha. It's actually a kind of funny story, but
it's cute. And the way they tell it is cute, but it would be much cuter if they were actually a couple. That would be, it would be okay.
Well, they are a couple of dumbasses.
Right, but Andrew Rolls is sitting there watching his wife basically coming on.
Oh, was Andrew there?
Yes.
I didn't see Andrew.
He's there.
And I don't think Camilla saw him either. So
I don't think Camilla gave a fuck, honestly. And I don't think Andrew necessarily gave a fuck.
He's but probably fucking somebody else in the hunting party.
This whole milieu knows and does not care that these two people who are married to others are fucking each other.
Whatever. Diana and Charles meet with Elizabeth to emphasize the importance of the tour. Elizabeth and Philip mention their successful tour, bringing them closer together and being a political triumph. I'm sorry, you guys got in a big fucking fight on that tour and about
like. No, but they talk about that. They're like, look, it was really hard, but it brought us closer together. Yeah. And we had this shared experience of surviving. Basically,
so suffer and then you'll be fine.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know of any couples who have not been through some shit.
Well, yeah, it's kind of cool being a couple and living your life. You're gonna go through shit,
right? Exactly. And
you know, if you can get there together, great.
Right and if you can, if but you have to work at it. You can't just like expect it to magically happen.
Then they go over, and then they're on the plane, and they go over the schedule, and Diana's concerned for the baby, who wasn't supposed to come, but she insisted, and apparently they'll be separated from the baby for the first 2 weeks of the tour, and she complains about it. I'm like, that's about as good as you're gonna get. Do you really want to bring this baby everywhere on the tour? The baby will be miserable.
She is the biggest fucking whiner. And she thinks that she's making this great Aristotelian argument about, come look at this baby in the crib. What does this baby look like? Is it beautiful or not?
She's also really rude because she's just like, do you have children, to this private secretary? And he's like, no. And then she's just like, I'm not surprised. And then Charles is like, Diana. And I'm like, yeah, Diana, what the hell? Don't say that.
Yeah, I mean, well, and then she goes through all this like, and I get the point of, hey, you might not understand what it's like to be a recently, you know, to be a mom.
Well, yeah, that's true. But like, the I don't know. And then she also, she talks about how it's her duty to bring up this child and make sure she has humanity in him. And I'm like, not the humanity again.
Here we go. Yep.
Great.
Yep. Yeah, and because then the royals are all horrible people and none of them are human.
And then they arrive in Australia and they're separated from William and she's clearly upset. Then Diana clearly doesn't know the landmarks that they're going on for the tour.
Embarrassingly stupid. Embarrassingly dumb, because they were trying to go over the itinerary. You could hear them on the plane before she went through her little speech about, oh, look at my beautiful baby. She and the baby is not happy with this whole travel.
Well, I can also understand, like, I can understand her being like, I want to be with my baby. Like, I don't want to be separated from my baby. That's like, just, I think that's part of like being a mother. Like, but you need to be realistic.
Right. How can you think that's not going to happen when you go on a 6-week tour of Australia? You haven't even bothered to look at what the fucking itinerary is. And yeah, when they're explaining it to you, you don't actually look or pay attention, and you show up in Australia and you don't know where Ayers Rock is. Ayers Rock.
But that's also not- like he like Charles is trying to feed her answers. And then there's this, it's a very awkward press conference, and Elizabeth and she's watching newsreels from the Australian tour, and Philip thinks that they shouldn't have sent the B team, and they're just gonna have to get over it because they're already there. Then Charles and Diana go to Ayers Rock, and not Ayers Dock, Ayers Rock, and start to climb it, but Diana struggles and leaves early because of the heat. I also like to point out that Charles, whenever they're like taking pictures, the photographers are like, hey, get closer. And it's just like, right, very awkwardly, like, just separate, like,
they're very he's very unhappy with her performance up to this point, because basically she's not even trying. And he's right, honestly, in what they're portraying. I don't know how accurate it is, but in what they are portraying, she's not making any fucking effort at all.
I agree, but I also think that given her health at this point, like her barely eating and whatever she's eating, purging, I can understand why she wouldn't feel healthy enough to go up to the summit of the rock. But well, she doesn't get that as an excuse. She's just like, it's hot. And I'm not going to give any of a shit.
Considering that, like, when Elizabeth and Philip went to Australia, there was this enormous, you know,
heat wave. Thing,
or no, with the wardrobe and all that other shit. And, you know, you've got her with her wardrobe. She's got like actual like mid, not mid, but like little short heels on.
Climb up like that. Like,
who dressed you today? What the fuck is wrong with you? This is like going to Balmoral and not having sensible shoes. This is just fucking dumb. So again, a lot of what I am seeing is like part of the Balmoral test again, right? You should fucking know what is expected of you on this thing. And she doesn't. And that to me is almost an unforgivable thing. It's like, how could you not know this?
Well, anyway, moving on. Charles calls Camilla because he does that when he's unhappy, which is always. And Mom, let's not do that. And then calls Diana weak, pathetic, and fragile, which given the portrayal and given the circumstances, I can understand him being upset about that. Because based off of everything, she's not really trying. She's not being like reasonable about the baby or being reasonable about anything really. And you can, he can, okay, I also wrote down, Camilla wants him to call every day to cheer him up and talk about missing each other. And in parentheses, I put, I may vomit.
Oh, that whole thing. I mean, the fact that,
which again, it's probably kind of tone deaf given the content of this episode, but still. Yeah, then you hear Diana in the distance yelling at the private secretary, the poor guy is just can't catch a break, to let her go to see her son. It has been 5 days. It's going to be the first 2 weeks of the tour. You are almost there. Why are you giving up now?
She's having a complete meltdown temper tantrum. It's like, what?
And they I don't know about postpartum depression or feeling that attachment to a child or anything like that. I don't understand that. Did you have postpartum depression?
I did not have postpartum depression. And, you know, honestly, it is not clear to me that that's exactly what this is.
Well, I think she has a lot of depression in general, but like, right. I think that.
Right. Right. I don't. It's just, because postpartum depression is usually tied to the hormone end of things. I don't know that that's what this was. I think, you know, she's got a myriad of issues. We have no idea what thing is what thing. I can say this. Would I be like super comfortable leaving you guys alone for more than a weekend? Probably not, but I wouldn't be a royal, number one. Number two, if I were and I had this amazing staff and all this other stuff, it might be different.
Well, I think the thing is, you're leaving your child in the custody of another person. And even if you do kind of trust them, it's still not you. And you want right. to have that connection to your child.
Right.
And she clearly does. So I can understand that aspect and her loving her child and wanting to spend time with him. I understand it. It's just, you need to be realistic about your station and what yes. is expected of you. So, yes.
And you knew it going in. You knew it. You've had like, because at this point, William is, we see it on this tour, he's learning to walk. So he's at least close to a year, right around that age. So you've had all this time. These things are planned months and months and months in advance. You know what's coming. And you fucking didn't bother to figure out how you were going to handle it? What the fuck?
Yeah. Anyway, they go to see William and spend some time with him. The press love seeing the family playing together. William takes steps on camera. He does very well. And then later, when she puts William down, this scene, I love this scene because it finally airs out all of the bullshit that's going on. And it just, I love it so much because they needed to get all of this out and they will not have a scene like this again. So I need to value it while I can. So Diana basically wants to talk to Charles about their relationship. They have a similar argument to Philip about never coming first. And how unaware he is of her unhappiness and unhealthy habits. But I also would like to point out that he was just like, I was very, very saddened by what I heard about you. And I'm like, you didn't know? Like the fact that you didn't know that your wife is having these issues is so telling about how unaware you are
in your life
and how what? Awful you are. You're just the worst. But I think she should have probably, this is a conversation she probably should have had a long time ago about how she is unhappy. And I think that that's just a problem with their relationship, is just communication. But to be fair, I don't know if he's always there anyway. He's probably just leaving her alone to go hang out with Camilla. So I don't know the context. It's not like I know that they are in the same house 24/7 and her being like, hey, actually, I'm really unhappy. It's not like that. I don't know if it's like that. So I don't know. But given the context, she has a point.
Yeah.
Like he should have been a little bit more aware, but also I think she should have communicated to him before now. But the fact that he had to hear from other people about her habits and her unhealthy style of lifestyle, I suppose,
yeah,
or choices, it's sad because even after hearing about it, he apparently didn't talk to her about it. like he didn't go like, hey, maybe you should not, or hey, are you okay?
What or, do I need hey, to maybe do to you make should you feel see better? Somebody.
Because it's not healthy. And if you right. want another child, I don't know if it's a good idea for her to be keep doing this and keep up this unhealthy habit. That's probably one of the reasons why she had problems in her first pregnancy.
Well, right. I mean, there are, again, myriad of issues, but I think that it is well worth, if you are the spouse of someone who's having these kind of issues in the relationship, to recommend that they see you know, first of all, a medical doctor, but second, you know, maybe a mental health professional.
Yeah, get a therapist for her. Like, I mean, it's not that difficult, Charles. Once you find out that your wife, imagine you're in his position. You've just found out, not his entire position, but like, imagine that you find out that your wife is binging and purging constantly, and she's very unhappy, and that's why she does it. Do you A, go see a mental health specialist to get her to open up a little bit and help her work through things? B, go to a medical doctor. C, both. D, none. I like, Charles, you chose wrong, dude. Like, I don't know what to tell you. You're being an idiot.
Yeah, he's being an idiot. There's no question in my mind.
And then she wants to be heard, understood, and appreciated, and feels like he doesn't understand how he feels. And then he's just like, I understand how it feels to be ignored and unappreciated. And if he's acting distant, it's because he doesn't feel understood by her, which is an okay argument if you take away the fact that he's always cheating on her.
It's an okay argument. I don't know. I don't really sympathize with Charles in this, but I don't really sympathize with Diana either. I mean, I feel like she had opportunities or the ability to do something about this, and she chose not to. And mm-hmm. I don't know, how, you know, that whatever. So I just was not really impressed with Charles. And he's like, I'm unthanked, and you know, people don't thank me for, you know, just doing my job, and.
I want a pat on the back.
Like, yeah, exactly. I want to be acknowledged and whatever.
I can understand that, but I understand how they both want it from each other, but aren't getting it. And I can understand the give and take not being there and that being an issue in your marriage. But I think there are other issues in your marriage, like Camilla, that you need to address before you get to the stage.
Asks about Camilla. Why can't, and you know, Charles, and she points out Charles can't leave her alone, and you know, she complains about his lack of passion towards her.
Oh, I have a lot of quotes from this.
Go ahead.
Yeah, he says he needs encouragement too. Diana thinks that's why he keeps going to Camilla, which is what you said. And she also says, I'm not going to say her name. I'm worried if I do, I might spit. And I'm like, fair enough. I'd be pissed too. And then she brings up the bracelet he gave her 3 days before their wedding and wearing the cufflinks she gave him on their honeymoon, which has two C's in, like, intertwined or something romantically stupid. It would be romantic if they were together. And then she also found a picture. It's a very like ballerina, like Philip thing. She found a picture of Camilla on their honeymoon in his diary. And she found their love letters full of passion that she just isn't getting from him. And I'm like, see, this is the problem in your marriage. But you also knew some of this beforehand, Diana, and you could have backed out. And I don't know why you didn't. Because I think the problem is when you had the Elizabeth talking to Charles about, you just need to grit and bear it and you need to get through this. I feel like we should have had a scene with Diana about it too. If yeah. you were going to try to convince anyone to go through with it, obviously Charles is just like, well, I'm already stuck, so it would look bad if I like stopped things now. But Diana seemed to be the one who wanted to call things off. I don't know why they didn't have a scene with her being like, hey, it's gonna be okay or something. I don't know, it just seemed like that should have been flipped.
Yeah, if they actually wanted it stopped, which they did not,
they so didn't.
Oh. Right, that was not the goal. And so they start talking about, hey, we just need to give each other encouragement and love and all these things and it'll be okay. And Diana says that Charles is the cleverest, handsomest man in every room. And he's like, oh, you really think so? And you know, they're the luckiest family in the world. And they both need encouragement, support, and to be appreciated and love from each other. I will say this, both of them are sucking black holes of emotional need.
They're perfect. They form one big black emotional pit of need. But I think that there were other like lines before that. Like he thinks that she shows no interest in him and she doesn't go to Highgrove where he's happiest. And she's like, because Camilla's there. Like,
yeah, and, like, duh.
And then the people Charles has introduced her to patronize and ignore her, but apparently probably love Camilla. And this part really just like breaks my heart. Like, you two are perfect for each other. So where do I fit in? And he says, you fit in because you are my wife, because I love you. And I'm like, do you really?
Yeah, he says it and she seems surprised but willing to believe, which I find fascinating.
If I, at that point in your relationship, I'd probably like, if I'm that broken down, I'm just kind of like, maybe it's like the glimmer of hope that maybe things will work out. And I think that's probably what she's clinging to. And
so what you're saying is Stockholm syndrome.
Yes, but I think that it's, and again, it's just sad because you know that things are not going to work out, but at the same time, just give them a moment of happiness or contentment or like giving themselves a chance to try. And
yeah, and again, you talk about this like the showrunners are running their lives, but this is actually partially at least documented as what happened. So when you talk about give them, they could give it to themselves and they choose this fuck shit.
I'm not saying like that they were in charge of their own lives. They could have made a lot of just different decisions that would have made everyone happier. And yeah, they could absolutely choose to be happier. And I'm glad that the showrunners are portraying them trying to be happy at this point.
Right, but they have what looks like a fairly happy Easter.
Yeah.
You know, they got William with his little lamb and they arrive in Perth and there are huge crowds and they go to Darwin and Adelaide and they hold hands and they're at the Sydney Opera House and they're cheering crowds, but it starts to shift to Diana being the star.
Well, before that, he gives a speech that supports Diana in Sydney, and then it shifts into, I think, one of my favorite scenes. Yes, I think I just love the song, but I think that's part of it.
It's a beautiful scene, and it is.
I love
like
it so much. The only
time we really see them happy.
I know, and that's why I love it so much, because I want people to be happy. Okay, basically, she like it goes for, and I rewatched this several times because I just love the sequence so much. It's really short, but it's fun. And so basically it goes from the speech and them driving off from that speech and people yelling for Diana and all that stuff, but it's not quite at like Diana fever quite yet, which is good for them at this point. So then you just see like his hand out and you see like his ring on his finger. So you just know. And I really love the scene, but she like takes his hand. They're like dancing to Can't Take My Eyes Off of You from by Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, which I just love that song. It's like so good. But they're like dancing, they're cheek to cheek. You can see they have such good chemistry, and like they're not just cheek to cheek, like they can still see each other, like look in each other's eyes and stuff. And then as soon as like it shifts to like the nice little jazzy part, he's just like, how about we give them a real show? And she's like, go on. And then they do a cute little dance, and then you see them like walking down the hallway to their hotel rooms, and they're about to go into separate ones, but then he goes into Diana's room, and it's just sweet. And I like that they are enjoying each other's company. You see them laughing, smiling, giggling. It's just like, is what their marriage could have been if they really tried. And because it really does say a lot about like putting the effort in. And it's similar, like with that conversation about we need to put effort in so that if we don't feel like we're getting something from the other person, we give it to them and then they'll retaliate and then everything will be a little bit more equal.
Right. But so this is part of the reason it's such, yeah, and of course, that whole conversation is probably a complete extrapolation, but
yeah,
assuming that it happened, let's say that it happened. If in fact that is something that was discussed between them. The fact that they let that go, like, you know what can happen.
No, it makes me sad that they let that go, if that actually was happening. But even the characters letting that go is just sad.
It is. So
speaking of letting it go, let's get to that part.
Yeah, hang on. So Camilla calls the next morning. Charles doesn't call her back.
And I was like, yay, the line is at the bottom.
Right.
It's like, so, dirt.
They go to an interview, and Charles talks about what a great wife and mother Diana is. They have a little stuffed koala for William. It's lovely. The awesome PM meets with Charles and is like, look, I thought we were going to overwhelm, we were going to overthrow the monarchy, but this one, the princess, people love her. We're screwed. We're going to have monarchy for a long time. I thought I could get you. And he's referred to Charles several times as the jug-headed loser or something like that.
Oh, God,
or jug-eared loser. But they start getting into a situation where the crowds are overwhelming and they're in a crush to see Diana. And there's a whole montage about this. And Elizabeth and Anne are watching this. They're getting ready to go on another military parade because that's what they do. And Anne's like, Charles isn't going to go for this. He's going to start feeling jealous because he likes to be center stage. This was supposed to be Charles's show. And if she starts overshadowing him, he's going to lose it.
I think it's telling that she knows her brother very, very well about expected.
He's petty.
Yes, but it's also the issue of we thought this was going to be his debut tour. Like, it was supposed to be this huge triumph for him. But yeah, once the tides turn more favorably towards Diana and he gets more ignored, it's going to have an impact. And especially for Charles, who is a petty little bitch. To be fair, how would you feel? Like, if this was supposed to be your tour, you are with your significant other and they get all the attention and nobody wants to see you, but they want to see your significant other. How does that make you feel?
It makes you feel pretty small and petty and childish. Yeah, no, I can totally see where he's coming from.
The way he handles it is not good.
No, it's not. And I think one of the things about Diana is she was such a phenomenon and it never seemed particularly calculated she seemed, and you hear the people even in this episode talking about how genuine she appears, how she's like a one of us and she's approachable and blah, blah, blah. The people's princess is what she was later dubbed. I think there was very much, it was a surprise to the royal family that she became such a pop culture figure.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't see it coming and didn't know how to handle it. And now it's like, fuck.
Yeah. Well, also Anne mentions like why the people love her. It's like, she's a charming person. She's down to earth. She's a great mother. And then it's clearly a dig at Elizabeth, but
I think the other part of it is like, because Elizabeth's like, oh, she's so whiny about the show. It's like, that is what's making her popular overseas. It's like she cares about spending time with William.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting.
Okay. Anyway, yeah, the crowd, they go on a parade and the crowd, like, crowds are on Diana, very Khaleesi, very Misa, yeah, very whatever. I sounded like things for a second, but that's not important. Charles goes to a polo match and everyone's like, oh, where's Diana? And then he's just like, just me, I'm afraid. And then everyone's like, oh, and it's just like, how is that supposed to make you feel?
Yeah, really? Shitty is not how it makes you feel.
Exactly. Like, the crowd, it's the public that really like contributed to that, at least in this portrayal it was. And you gotta, like, I'm not surprised he was feeling inadequate because Diana's at like a swimming thing and she's very charming. Everyone's excited. She's doing great.
Yeah, but it's so easy too. Like, you're surrounded by these Aussie swimmers in little swim trunks and they're asking like, oh, and she's acting flirty about it, which is easy to do, whereas Charles actually has to do something that involves skill, and he falls off his pony, and people are like, oh, loser.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see the difference there, right?
Yeah, well, obviously I see the difference, but I mean, it's not like she's going to get up and do a sport. It's not like she's the one swimming, but I understand that, but it doesn't, even before that, she was being praised anyway. So it's not like, it's like whatever she would do. It's kind of like what Anne said, whenever she just wears a dress, everyone's just like, oh my God. And so it's true. She can do anything. And then they go to a dinner. I love her outfit. It's the red one with the gold.
Oh, it's beautiful. Really cool. Yeah.
It's really pretty. And she's wearing a crown and all that stuff. And Charles is giving a speech about like,
oh no, what? No. Before that, she gets out of the car and she's walking ahead of him.
Yeah. He does. And he gets his pocket square done, but he doesn't get to go first.
Yeah. Well, and he's supposed to.
Yeah. I mean, that's just how things are. I mean, there were certain points when they're like getting out of the plane that he let her go first as like a sign of, hey, you have the spotlight.
Yeah.
But now she's just expecting it. And so she just immediately goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, he's giving a speech and he's just like, oh yeah, everyone, like the last time I was here is before we had just announced our engagement. Everyone's like, good luck and all that stuff. You've gotten the best woman in the world. And she makes a little face like she's like blushing or like, I don't know if it was quite blushing though, but it was more just
like, oh, almost sarcastic, like, oh, are they talking about me? Like, yeah, obviously, it looks open to multiple interpretations, some of which are negative.
And he doesn't see the look, but he sees the reaction. Everyone's laughing and he feels like they're laughing at him. And he also says, you never know what they're doing behind your back. And I'm like, okay. And like, you hear a couple oohs from the crowd. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, maybe not the best thing. But so they go to their room and like, he's talking about, this was supposed to be my triumph. I'm getting booed everywhere because they're just obsessed with you. And I'm not getting any of this. And she's just like, well, at least be thankful that I'm getting them to show up. And I was like, not the best time, Diana.
Yeah, like, no, that the best. Is definitely like it's back to war, basically.
He goes into a separate bedroom. There are 10 more days in New Zealand.
Right. And so it all crumbles and it's still, you know, fairly early. They visit with the PM, and he talks about this being terra nobilis, nobody's
country.
But it, you know, it's their own country now. I thought, you know, Diana was going to, you know, make the monarchy
look bad.
But unfortunately, there we are. It's the power of fairy tales. That superstar is going to save you. Mm-hmm. Is basically what he says. And then they go to a Maori Aboriginal show in New Zealand. And it's very antagonistic. Like the show itself is very kind of aggressive.
It's very creepy, the transition into it. Like she goes into the plane and it's all dark in the plane. And then like a guy with makeup, a traditional makeup, just like shows up and is just like, ah. And I'm just like, ah.
Yeah.
I was not prepared. And so I was not prepared.
He goes back to being puking and crying. Mm-hmm. And they get back to London. It is raining. They go their separate ways.
Like, I like the way it's blocked though. Like Diana takes William and is like Kensington Palace, and in the other car that's facing in the opposite direction is like Highgrove. And then they just drive off in separate directions. And then the private secretary is stuck in the middle next to the plane with his umbrella. It's just really like, funny to me.
Yes. So then we've got Elizabeth. Diana goes to meet with Elizabeth. And
calls her mother, which is kind of awkward. But like she says that she was told to call her mother. So, I mean.
Right. And but Elizabeth clearly shocked by it. And then Diana says that, oh, you know, Charles and I are so unhappy, and that Charles resents Diana. And Elizabeth's like, look, you know, you guys looked pretty happy there for a while. But we all know when we're playing to the gallery excessively. And you know, she's taking Charles aside, which again is something I kind of respect in this circumstance, is Elizabeth standing up for her child. That's a good thing. and honestly, there is some truth. You know, Diana, once she starts getting the audience intention, it's kind of like, she doesn't know where the line is. And again, this isn't a theatrical show. This is real life and involves real people and real family.
Well, the thing is, like, then she talks about how she felt ill-prepared and people feel bad for her. And Elizabeth's like, it's a mistake to assume that people sympathize with you, that people feel bad for you or pity you. It's a mistake because you're often wrong. Like, I mean, you can't read people's minds. And also, you are in a very privileged position that once people realize how privileged you are or how different you are from them, and given your circumstances, they're going to stop pitying you.
Well, and she also, Diana says, and I wrote this down because I thought it was surprising. Again, I'm sure this is probably extrapolation, but Diana says, Charles and Anne resent me.
Yeah.
I play for the team. And
Anne definitely resents her. That's for sure.
Well, right. And Elizabeth's the captain, and there's something about, you know, she's pushing Diana away or something. No, she rings Elizabeth at that point, kind of rings for Diana, take her away. I'm done.
Well, no, she's also like, she just wants for Elizabeth to appreciate her so that others will follow. It's a lot like the Margaret thing where it's just like, once you guys shun him, everyone else will.
Yes. Yeah. Well, right. But again, I think that's a little bit different for Margaret because Tony,
it's her family.
He's an outsider, you know, he wants to be an outsider, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, you don't give him anything and that's fine. Diana's the outsider in this circumstance, and she wants to be supported on the inside. And that's not something you get to demand.
Yeah, it's more, that's a bit of an ask. And if everybody else wanted that, I'm like, everybody wants to feel appreciated and all that stuff with, and because she even mentions, like, that's all everyone wants from you. And then she hugs Elizabeth.
Yeah, she hugs Elizabeth, and Elizabeth stands there with her arms stiff out to her sides, not touching Diana. And we are back at inhuman Elizabeth, who does not care anything about anyone, about her own children, none of those things. Like it's almost like Elizabeth, they're trying to portray Elizabeth as like, you showed me up as a mom kind of thing. You know, it's kind of like, I just, so the Queen Mother,
the ladies gather to talk to Elizabeth about Diana and her issues.
And the Queen Mother says, Diana will bend as they all do. And Anne points out she might break.
And then she breaks a breadstick for effect.
Oh, I thought it was celery.
No, it's a breadstick.
Okay. And that's the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
What was your best part?
Charles and Diana getting along. Like the dancing sequence, I absolutely adore. The argument leading to the I love you. Because at least they're airing out their dirty laundry. Like, I mean, at least they're talking about it. Like, it's better than bottling it up and just being like, I'm just going to be miserable and lock myself in my room. That's not going to solve anything. And so I think them talking about it is very important. And I think that their conversation is very nice about how them like, all right, I want this. You want this as well. We need to give it to each other. We need to actually start making an effort in our marriage, because otherwise we're just going to be screwed. And what do you think that's going to do to William? Like, that's not mentioned, but I think that's another element to factor in. It's like, how is this going to look to the press? How is it going to look to our child? How are we going to figure this out? And I love the performances from Emma Corrin and Josh O'Connor. I think they're great. What about you?
I have the dance and the part that the couple being happy with Prince William.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, much of what you say, I agree that the performances are quite good. But those were the things I wrote down. What were your worst parts?
Charles being a stupid dickhead. And I did say getting jealous as well, but I think that it's a natural progression from like being ignored by the public and being booed and all that stuff. I think it's all culminating into him being angry. And I think that's normal. I think that's a valid reaction. He does not take it out well. He does not like figure things out very well. And I'm not saying Diana helps, she certainly doesn't, but I think that, yeah, it's the pettiness. Then also Charles and Camilla, why? Like, Diana not compromising. I think that that's a big one for me. I think that her not compromising about William, her not compromising about the popularity and her attention, and, just in general, like it's another thing about them not making an effort, even though they talked about making an effort.
They're not willing to share the spotlight with each other. And I think that's a huge problem.
Yeah. And also Margaret Thatcher's voice. Go ahead.
I have actually several. I was kind of surprised by this. Like, I had several things about this episode that I didn't like. I really was frustrated by the lack of a consistent point of view. So you've got a lot of, you know, we should feel sorry for Charles because Diana's stealing a spotlight. You should feel sorry for Diana because the queen treats her like shit. I mean, you should feel, and there's a lack of consistency about, you know, they don't take a side and they don't do it on purpose, but you know, at some point, I don't know. I think they're trying a little too hard to appease everybody, the showrunners are.
Well, I don't know how they're going to do that otherwise, to be fair.
Right. Well, I mean, then you take a side, right? You basically say, yeah. Charles is a dick for sleeping with Camilla and poor Diana. Or you take the, hey, Diana should suck it up. You know, I there's a lack of consistent point of view. I think that makes it particularly hard in this episode. The return of no emotion, Elizabeth. Like across the board, I despise that scenario, and it's crept back into the season. You know, I the first couple episodes, I was like, oh, hey, she's a fairly normal. No, she's not. No, she's not. They are not portraying her that way. Both Charles and Diana seem bipolar in this very episode, and I think, you know, that's one of the differences. Like, you have this very obvious parallel between Elizabeth and Philip going to Australia and Charles and Diana going to Australia. And the difference is that Elizabeth and Philip, while they had like not a perfect marriage, they had a solid marriage before they went. And you go through this thing and you come out on the other side and you kind of know where you stand, right? You know, like we've got this shared war experience kind of thing. You got Charles and Diana who don't have a healthy relationship going. Then they come back and it's still not healthy. I mean, you know, like adversity can only make you stronger if you are willing to take in what it brings to you, and they just aren't. And again, I find the dialogue that they're given to be bipolar. It's probably supposed to be for Charles and Diana. I don't appreciate it as a change in character for Elizabeth and you know, some of the other characters that we've seen prior seasons. They weren't bipolar before, but now we're going to portray them that way. I find far more jarring than, you know, these two being bipolar. But I do find this, I'm an awful person. And again, it segues into being a second black hole of emotional need. Both of them are. And they are just toxic, awful, both of them. So those are my worst parts.
Okay.
How did you grade this episode?
A-. I like it. I like seeing them happy for once. You don't see it ever again, but I liked it. I love the dance. I love them being happy, them talking about their issues, because again, it's not going to happen again. I'm savoring it while it lasts. And I think that I understand your idea about the lack of consistent point of view, but at the same time, I think that's more fair than them taking a side. And even though it makes it jarring, I think that I want to see more of a I want them to be more three-dimensional than, oh, Charles is just awful, or Diana is just poor Diana, or, well, okay, she doesn't really get more than that, but I think that...
Great mother. Great. That's certainly going to be a theme, I think.
Well, I think another thing is that... Oh, God. I like that they aren't trying to just make one person the villain and one person the victim. I like that they're at least trying not to do that. It's hard given the circumstances and how much the tabloids were skewed in favor of one person over the other. And obviously, Charles cheating on Diana is not good, and it will never be good. And it will never be excusable. It will never be, like, it's not... No, it's bad. And that shouldn't be seen as anything but bad. However, I think that them betraying them as trying something and trying to give something more to each other. And it proves that their relationship, to a certain extent, could have worked, except the public praising Diana. And you can see that that is a big crack in their marriage. And it's a sore spot for both of them because he resents the attention she gets, and she resents him for resenting it. And so obviously that's going to be something that you can't undo. It's not something you can control. It's just something that happened, and it's one of those things you just can't fix. And that's never going to change.
Right. So you can't control that. Like,
you can control your reaction to it. And yes. He doesn't, but that just proves how much their marriage. Right.
But she doesn't either. In fact, she encourages it. And yeah, I think that's really the issue that he has with her above and, you know, like, that is, you know, that he's told you, I can't deal with, you know, you're getting all the attention. And then
I don't know what he wants her to do about that, though, because it's not like, because right, you need to turn it on for the cameras. It's kind of like with the making faces during the speech. Yes, she could have stopped doing that. And and it's possible that she could have tried doing that. But again, that's more in hindsight than anything else. Like, in the moment, she decided to make the face. She decided to do that. And the effect was not what he wanted, but it was something that she thought was a common good. But it's like, you can't always control how your actions affect, like, the public's reaction. You can't always change that. And you obviously can't change how he feels about being laughed at or the situation being laughed at. I personally don't think they were laughing at him. I think they were just laughing at funny face or funny situation. And him taking it the other way is something that's not going to change until he makes the decision to change it. So them being
she knows that that got that reaction, so she shouldn't be doing it again.
Exactly. So she'll learn from that if they talked about it like that. But I think that, again, I liked that they at least tried at some point to do it. I like a lot of the sequences in this episode. I wish we saw more happiness from their marriage, but obviously we are not. And there are many reasons for that, and we will get to them later. But I think that I just like seeing them happy. I like people being happy, and I know it's a horrible relationship. We all know it. It's just, I'm glad they tried and it didn't work. And that's all the more reason why this marriage should not have continued as long as it did or happened in the first place. But I think that given the circumstances, at least they tried. In this show, anyway. I don't know about real life. What about you? What's your overall grade?
You're gonna hate me. I put it as a C-D+. And I have a reason. I know you're giving me the face. I see it. And I will say this: I love the dance sequence probably as much as you do. I really do. I like the idea of them talking it out. I don't believe that happened.
I don't think it happened.
it's right. just nice to think that it might have.
right. I mean, and of course, you know, it might have, sure. And let's say that it did. Let's assume that this conversation happened. It doesn't salvage to me the incredible selfishness of these two people. And I think, you know, there's some part of me that feels a little betrayed by the Diana press, right? Because again, I was around during all of this, and she got, and I bought into a good bit of the, oh, poor Diana, you know, she's, you know, been thrust into this situation. But, you know, as things progress, you get this sense of like, hey, you knew, right? Mm-hmm. You knew, and you're not making the effort. And again, I can see, you know, getting into it and, you know, really trying and then not being able to see it through. Possible, totally plausible. But I can't really see the not trying. And the way this is portrayed, she's not trying. And I don't sympathize with her. I haven't sympathized with Charles. The performances, yes, they're good performances. I just don't feel like this episode was particularly enlightening to me, maybe. I just don't feel like, I mean, I think it is an episode that was necessary because these are documented events that occurred, some of them. I mean, you know, obviously the tour occurred and, you know, the dance occurred, because, you know, everybody knew, right? But the background of it, I still feel like it's speculative.
Well, yeah, it's always going to be, but I don't know. I just liked seeing people happy.
I know.
And I also just love the actors together. They have great chemistry. Sure. And I think that they just work very well. And again, that's just me and my warped brain just being like, oh, but they're cute together. And so that automatically makes the historical figures cute together. No, it does not. But
they looked cute from what you could see on the outside. Yeah, but clearly there was some shit going on.
I still think it's a bit harsh to give this a C- D+, but I think that...
Part of it is the Charles and Camilla thing. Like, you know, I just...
But he said no to a single phone call, mother. That's progress. Oh, right, and then he goes back, so whatever.
Part of the things that you don't know about is, like, there were staunch denials that he was still seeing Camilla publicly.
Well, of course there were. They wanted to keep up the fairy tale ruse.
But, yeah, I mean, right. But the palace would come out, oh, no, Charles... You know, like that kind of shit. And then this whole, oh, you fit because I love you. Oh, vomit. That is just vomit. Then, you know, and I don't see her falling for that at this point. I understand you thought that, you know, she was broken down and whatever. I
think she just wanted to believe it. I don't think that it's necessarily true. But I think that at that point, she just wanted to believe that there was something worth saving, because she loves her child. She doesn't want to be parted from her child. And given the circumstances, if she divorced him, she's probably not going to get custody. And so I think that there are a lot of stakes for her personally into this marriage that I think more for her than for him, in all honesty.
I think the baby is wanting
to make it work and wanting to know where she fits in this marriage is important.
Right. The baby is not a stabilizing force for him. It is for her. It is something that her more vested. Yes. And, you know, so that's, I don't know. It's interesting. But again,
doesn't change your mind, and I understand that, and you shouldn't have to change your mind just because of my opinion. I just think that, again, I just liked seeing people happy, and I liked that a lot of scenes in this, and I think that a lot of it had conversations that should have been had at some point, even if it made no difference in the long run. I think that they're nice conversations to have, especially, like, it says a lot about relationships in general, like, you need to give and take. You need to actually be equal in that give and take. And if you're not, it's not going to be that healthy, and it's not going to be
there's going to be an unhappiness in your marriage and or your relationship in general. And I think that's an important thing to have. And obviously that was absent in their relationship. So
absolutely. Absolutely.
But yeah, so that's our rant.
that is our rant about the Charles and Diana's.
It is not the last rant.
There will be more. But in any case, we hope that as the season progresses, that you tune in. Yeah, I can talk. Tune in, and that you join us. And
cheers.